Hey guys, it's Jenna Elfman from Fear the Walking Dead. I play Laura. No, I play Naomi. No, I play June. I play June on Fear the Walking Dead. And you're listening to the Fear the Walking Dead talk through on Golden Spiral Media.
That was awesome.
Fear the Walking Dead talk through episode 48, Blackjack Review.
Welcome to Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through, a fan podcast dedicated to Fear the Walking Dead on AMC. Join us each week as we discuss the characters, story developments, and theories of Fear the Walking Dead. Send in your thoughts about each episode by calling 304-837-2278. Or by visiting our feedback page at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback. And now, here's your hosts.
Hey, survivors, and welcome to another fine episode of Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. I happen to be Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I'm still Mark.
You're still Mark. Unbelievable. All right. So this episode, we'll be talking about season 4, episode 13, for most of it anyway, titled Blackjack. And I say most of it because we're going to start this one off with some feedback for last week's episode.
We can talk about it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
We got a couple of gems, one long gem and one small gem, about season 4, episode 12, which was weak.
You're worthless and weak.
So this first one is from Laura Willie Swink. So friend of the show, and good to hear from you. I think it's the first time we've heard from you in this half. I don't know. For the most part, maybe she might have chimed in on a couple of news pieces. But other than that, we haven't heard about her for the episodes. So she says, 7 out of 10. Most of that given for the acting and one extra point for Coleman Domingo's directorial debut. For Awesome Sauce, she says, Maggie Grace was really magnificent in this. Both actresses were very good, but her performance shined in this episode. I'd have to give it a second watch to pay closer attention to the direction of the episode, but since Coleman Domingo is so damn awesome, I'll throw him in here just on principle.
And her lame sauce, the writing on the show continues to frustrate me. More of that in a gripey feedback. Also, if Al insisted that her biggest concern was for her tapes, why didn't she just put them in the truck along with her and June and take them with her?
I cannot dispute that one at all.
Also, not part of this episode, but I do think it's kind of lame that Madison had to claw, kick, and kill her way to a position of leadership on this show, but Morgan shows up spouting his philosophy of pacifism, and immediately everyone is following him for some reason. Lenny James is an incredible actor, but the writers still have not brought back the badass Morgan of season 3 Walking Dead, in my opinion, and he has seemed to become a leader just because the writing says so.
That's interesting. I agree. All right. I'm the gripey feedback, and I'm not sure I'm going to be doing a gripey voice, but just take it for the grain of salt.
Well, you could say, it's gripey feedback.
Huh? Yeah.
Anyway.
All right. Oh, gripey feedback. More and more fear is getting sucked into the Gimpleverse. In the beginning of the season, I felt I was getting a sense of the new showrunners, but now it just feels like Scott Gimple working his machinations through his minion showrunners. That's interesting.
You know, I'll bring this up now. I was going to mention this in the info about the episode, but I watched the like making of the inside video that comes with the episode for this week. And when they showed Scott Gimple, it had called him executive producer / showrunner. So as far as I know, he isn't the showrunner, but I was kind of surprised to see that. That could have been a typo left over from, like, you know, them making those videos before. I know he's, like, you know, chief creative officer, but that still, I saw that, like,
that seems like
really a showrunner or something. So I won't correct anyone from now on if they say that he's a showrunner,
because that seems like an easy thing that they could have fixed even after the fact.
But I will agree with you, Laura, here, that, and because I've said it, that this is feeling a lot like season 4B. It is kind of like they took out the Gimple playbook and they're just kind of, you know, manipulating it for the circumstances that are here on Fear. Like, and even when you think of, like, how they killed off Madison, that's kind of manipulative, much like Glenn's dumpster thing, although he wasn't killed then, but that was kind of manipulative as well, you know. So it is Gimple-ish.
All right. And she continues to go on. Dialogue is getting a bit campy, ham-handed, and esoteric, the same way it has been on The Walking Dead for seasons. Also, stories of the characters running around in circles and going nowhere while the writers try to establish character is very main show reminiscent. Understandably, a lot of people love that tone and style with the popularity of The Walking Dead. It just really loved the tone of the original Fear and don't feel like we need another show that is identical to The Walking Dead.
I think that it's like they finally got the rhythm on Fear last season, and then they turn around and they just simply drop it. And, you know, it is frustrating for, like, I think you're of one of two camps right now. Either you love what they've done and you're fully behind it, or you hate what they've done. And, you know, so far I'm leaning towards the hate part, basically because I'm not really seeing the reason for what they've done. Like, I still cannot understand why they had to kill off Madison, you know. And until they can show me a story that it makes sense, it seems to me like it's one of those. I've seen this with a lot of shows. They bring in a new showrunner and either it really works out or the show gets bad. And I'm not going to say the show's getting bad, but it's taken it in a different direction, and it feels very much like a different show, completely different show than it did last season.
Yeah. Well, also sometimes when you bring in a new showrunner, obviously Gimple is seasoned, but the thing is that they have to find their feet in a new story now. And that's what he had to do with the original Walking Dead for the proper show. I think eventually they will get to that point again. I just wish that they wouldn't just do recurring kind of themes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with
you. Yeah. Yeah. There's so many stories that can be told in the apocalypse, and yet they kind of dumb it down, you know, and do the same old.
I'm kind of feeling a little bit of my frustration is that this is starting to feel more and more like The Walking Dead and not its own Fear the Walking, you know, like its own deal. Cause you're right. Season 3 was like really, really good and was like, it seemed definitely was going in the right direction. And then because of the changes, it was like, okay, well, I can get where, you know, we're going to have to maybe have a little bit of like, you know, stumbling again, but they'll eventually get there. But yeah. I'm just feeling that it's like, this is starting, like, you know, you can hear the music swell and like, you know, I don't know. I feel like those pieces that we see in the main show where it's like, oh, it's a big artistic montage of their faces and blah, the music swells. And it's like, oh, it's this over dramatic thing. And I'm like, get back to the story.
Yeah.
Like it's just too much theater and not enough substance.
Yeah. The second piece of feedback comes from one of my best friends growing up, if not my best friend, Jeff Kozlenka. And he just says something really short, but I still had something to say about it. He says, "Sorry, Brian, this series is fading fast. As far as sauce goes, sour."
No sweet and sour?
Yeah. Yeah. So I wrote this particular thing in the show notes here last week. So I was curious to see how I would feel about the show after this week's episode. Like I left it intact. So this is for me like a week ago. And I'll say I talked last episode about the filthy woman being a chaos agent in the plot. Like, I guess she would be considered chaotic evil if I understand that whole thing. Isn't that from Dungeons and Dragons or something?
Isn't that what it's from? Yeah, they did it in D&D, but chaos was also the bad company in Get Smart.
Yeah, anyway. Well, going to season 3, and I'm comparing her to last season's chaotic agent, Troy. Hopefully Laura's listening. I'm mentioning Troy. Well, she loved Troy. Mm-hmm. And I can totally see why, because she was so interesting, you know? And that's the general consensus of him. He was a really interesting, well-drawn character. And he was evil sometimes and good other times. And that's what I think made him interesting. What would he be, a chaotic neutral, if I understand the term correctly? Anyway, you compare him for chaos to this filthy woman, and I would pick Troy hands down. You know, it's just like I'm looking at this character right now, and I will say I think she got more interesting this week. But I still would have to say, you know, in terms of a well-drawn, antagonist character, Troy was so much better, you know, and, you know, like I feel for Laura here because I know how much she was into season 3 of Fear. I mean, she loved it and, you know, you'd hear that enthusiastic feedback from her every week. And it was well deserved. That show last year was firing in all cylinders. It was good every episode. And it was a pleasure to podcast on it. And this one, I mean, I've had some times, I'll say ahead of time, I enjoyed this one. This one really helped in you know, kind of restoring some of my feelings on the show. But there were a few episodes there, the last couple, I was starting to struggle, you know, I hope that, you know, they come back with, you know, good 3 strong episodes to close it out.
Oh, definitely.
But we'll see.
I hope so.
I hope so too.
All right. Well, so let's get into it. Season 4, episode 13 is called Blackjack. Written by co-showrunner Ian Goldberg, and I should have looked him up, but I think he's executive story editor, Richard Nang. He wrote a previous episode. I'd have to look to see which one, but I know he wrote one of the ones from the first part.
Yes.
Directed by Sharat Raju. All right, so let's start it with you, Mark. What'd you think of this episode, Blackjack?
Well, I gave it 9.5 Gators Eating Zed Decoys, or 9.5 First Aid Ice Packs to keep one beer cold for a dying old man.
All right, well, I gave it, and I'll just put it out there, 6.8 Goose Egg Laying Lucianas. I'm still having issues with her with a couple scenes, but so I'm like, I was like, I enjoyed the episode, but I'm sticking to where I'm at right now.
6.8 wow. Goose eggs. Rotten eggs, maybe. All right. Well, I kind of hinted at it. I enjoyed this episode a lot. It wasn't perfect. I actually retracted my rating a little bit, but it's still pretty good at a 9. Costly bottles of scotch or unexpected cold brews, or to quote John Dory, slow one-legged dogs. So I was originally going to give it a 9.5. And part of the reason why I decreased it a little bit was after listening to the Talking Dead and Chris on there, he said it was the worst episode ever, which I was like, wow, I was kind of surprised. Yeah. and he made some compelling, you know, cases, Jason as well on there. But I still, on the whole, enjoyed the episode with some admittedly, you know, minor holes, some suspension of disbelief. But unlike the last two episodes, I enjoyed this one a lot. It felt good. You know, I didn't have the kind of issues that I had with the, there was nothing there that made me go, yeah, right. You know, so it's good. It's good. All right. So we've got some listener ratings. Mark, take
sure.
The first one.
Steve Brown says 8 out of 10 first aid kit ice packs.
All right. PB and Zane gives it a 6.5 out of 10 Morgan Stockers.
And I'm very pleased to mention this person's name, Dieta Patterson. Yay, she's back. She rates this episode 7 out of 8. Wonder how she came up with 8. Down Under Australia Alligator Adventures.
Glennis Goltz gives it 9 out of 10 Convoy Meets Jaws.
That actually fits. All right, so let's go to Awesome Sauce.
Awesome Sauce!
And Mark is up first.
PB and Zane, alligator attack.
That was kind of cool. Dieta Patterson, and welcome. I'm so glad you're back. Her awesome sauce was Luciana finding a cold beer, one for our mystery truck driver who was delivering care packages along the road.
And to that, I said, they finally gave Luciana something to do.
she got a quest.
I will say she I can't disagree with you about her character, Kyle, but I will say that she did have some good scenes this episode, and you know, I mean, I booed her last week, if you remember.
Yes, I know.
You know, that's surprising, because I remember when we were podcasting in season 2, I made a comment like, she's so cute, she's got that cute little nose and stuff like that, and yeah, I mean, she's an attractive woman, no doubt, but her character the last couple of seasons has not been interesting at all, so at least she had some interesting scenes here, so I was happy to see that. Steve Brown is next. He had 3 of them. He said, it looks like everyone will be back together soon, hopefully. Lucy finding polar bear, apparently. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that was polar bear, although they didn't name him specifically. you know, he was called Clayton, but that had to be his like CB name, Polar Bear. Last is seeing Strand and John Dory. Yay!
Glennis Gultz says, "Don't bring a knife to a spade fight." Smiley face. John Dory's boat making skills had me in fits when he stood on it and immediately started sinking. I was with Strand on that raft boat attempt, as we all were. He needed a bigger boat.
Yeah.
The truck rollover stunt was good. We all know, don't drink and drive. The second boat build attempt was stronger flotsam wise, but a pity John lost his oar, and so it went downhill from there on. The group slowly all meeting up together again, just in time, too, as Filthy Lady will be a formidable opponent.
I thought the same thing about the boat. It was kind of
it was.
All right. Well, you just gave a bunch of awesome sauces, but let's hear yours, Mark.
Mine would be Wendell dispatching the walker in the beginning of the episode. I love, despite his disability, that he is confident and still doing something within a ZA.
Yeah. I thought that was great.
It shows that somebody who has a handicap still can function in a world even in the apocalypse. I think that's awesome, and I love the addition of that character.
I
love the exchange between him and Beer Man.
Sarah?
No,
Jimbo.
And he's all he's all like, "Oh no, hold on." He's like, "Oh, what? You want some rebar?" And then
you want a rock?
Yeah. And he pulls the blade things in the back, which I was like, "Oh, that is so cool."
It was almost like a Mad Max wheelchair.
Yeah, it was just it was cool. I loved it.
My next bit would be Strand and John Dory in this episode. They got a good feel of one another and know each other a little bit more in some way. Much needed interaction from the old cast member with a new cast member. So to create some sort of relationship. Just like Morgan with Sarah and Wendell and Jimbo and June.
Yeah, that was probably the part of the episode that I really liked, was the Strand and John Dory scenes.
Yeah, I would agree with that. John Dory, you know, Garrett Dillahunt, he is so good. I don't know how I've mostly avoided his career until now. Because he's such a fine actor. It's his presence, you know?
Yeah.
And he just, like, especially the way he plays John Dory, it's like he is a character that you would want to be with in the apocalypse, because he's trustworthy. He's just, like, got a solid character. He's capable.
Mm-hmm.
He's actually pretty smart. I mean, you guys thought he was simple, remember?
Yeah.
He's
like a MacGyver.
I was gonna say he's got a lot of ingenuity, you know.
I like his character. I like him as an actor because I've seen him in a lot of other stuff, and he always brings the same kind of performance, and that's what I love. I just didn't really get the character and was kind of like making my rush to judgments of like what I thought was going to happen or where I'm coming from. But I mean, it's like him as the actor, and like he literally every week his performance is awesome.
It's almost like if you look at him, the way he acts, it's almost similar to Michael Shannon. And that's an underrated actor, but he's been in a lot. Yeah. You see him and he's able to, you know, both of them are able to get into these characters and dig something out of there. Hopefully I'll be able to talk to him at Atlanta Walker Stalker and say, "Hey, how do you prep for a character like this?"
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I found out this week that I will not be attending Walker Stalker Atlanta. Aww. So I will be entertaining my mother-in-law while the convention is going on. So it's fine. I just I was iffy to be able to go anyway, but this sucks, but whatever. There'll be other conventions to go to. So all right, Kyle, what do you have?
I think the overall humor of the show is what I'm finding awesome about this back half. And while I'm having issues with some of the character developments in the story, it's like I am catching myself laughing during the show. And yeah, mostly from Sarah Wendell's hijinks.
I love
which is really nice. Yeah. Time to stir the beef.
They just remind me of Abraham, Rosita, and
Eugene. Yeah. But it's like there's just times where it's like, okay, I know this is like they're in this like predicament or they're trying to figure this out and this and that. But their characters, like I'm like, I'll sit there and I will laugh out loud. I'm like, oh, I'm catching myself. Wait, no, this is something serious. And then, I'm loving this season, this back half. I think they are making it so much more enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they are a good comedy duo. And you know, I questioned, what the heck they were doing before they took the truck. I think they've kind of explained it. I mean, they were truck drivers before. Mm-hmm. They must have just been driving around, I guess. but anyway, so they've explained that, but they've got great screen chemistry and they're just so funny together, like individually and together. And I am enjoying them. And in fact, my awesome sauce is you kind of went general on the overall humor and I went specific. I highlighted the scene when they confronted Morgan. And then once Morgan swatted the gun out of Sarah's hand, they all backed down. That was really funny.
I mean, that was going to be my awesome sauce too, because like that whole scene was just amazing.
Yeah.
But I thought that totally gave so much more of like their characters and kind of what they're about.
Yeah.
Like they're like, they want to play tough, but yet they're also like, we need help. And like, we're trying, well, Sarah wants beer. But then here's, she's trying to pull, basically Morgan called her bluff. Yeah. And so she was like, okay, sure, we'll go with him.
Yeah. And even beer guy was funny. That scene, but the funny thing is though, the question that they asked, I think like it was humorous, but I think it would be the same kind of question I would ask Morgan, like at that point, if I didn't know him. Mm-hmm. Like, like what makes you, be the leader here? What makes you, like, what'd you do? Or, I get all of what they said. So the fact that they kind of stood up to him, temporarily, it made perfect sense, but the way they stood down so quickly, I thought that was so funny.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite moments in the episode. I mean, there were several. I have to agree the John Dewey and Strand parts, and I will also say it was really good to see Alicia again, not so much Charlie, but. At the end, because I was wondering when they would I thought we might have to wait another episode or two to see them, and thankfully we didn't. So all right, let's move on to the week variety.
You're worthless and weak,
Mark. We're gonna give you a break since you had to do all those awesome sauces in a row. And Kyle, why don't you give the first one?
Yes.
And there's a reason why we're giving it to you.
All right. Brian Heath, a.k.a. my husband, who finally joined. Welcome to the group. His what sauce is the alligator. WTF was that? There were better graphics in Jaws 35 years ago. Come on, man. Get it together.
Yeah, it was funny when Brian joined the Facebook group, which is at facebook.com/group/walkingdeadgsm. Thought I would give that now. Anyway, when he joined, I was on my computer and I saw it come in and I was going to accept him, but he had already been accepted. I'm like, oh, okay. Somebody must have been really paying attention. And then I don't know if it was something you said when I welcomed him. I went, oh, you're that Brian. It was so funny because I didn't realize it was him when the request came in. So
yeah, it was funny because we were watching that episode last night, and then of course he made this comment, and I'm just all like, oh, weak sauce, because he was like, that's weak. Like, you go join up right now and add the
you have to do it.
Yep. So now he's a member.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, that's cool. Anyway, all right. Last weak sauce that we got from listener was from Steve Brown, who said, John and Strand still being stuck and the only ones without a radio. Yeah, I get you. I mean, it's kind of weak. And I kind of wonder, like, when are they going to be able to get off the pseudo-island, you know? But yeah, the only ones that don't have a radio. And maybe they do have a radio. They're just in that little shack. They just haven't
used it yet. Well, I mean, there were scenes of, like, there looked like there was a radio that Strand was walking up to in the beginning that was all beat up or, like, broken. So, I mean, their car did get flooded and it was out there. So maybe they lost a lot of stuff. That's
Yeah. All right. Mark, what do you have for week?
Well, I have to actually add to Brian, Mr. Brian Heath, about that. You know, not seeing that gator, but I realized they wanted a Jaws kind of effect for the story, but they could have at least gave us a better look of it, you know. I was surprised that they didn't use Blackjack bubblegum. So sad. I like that gum. I used to get it by the ton.
Chris Hardwick had some kind of blackjack, and it looked like the way he was chewing it was gum.
Yeah,
but
and the next bit I have is Strand not being able to drink with Mattis again. You know, he was concentrating on the past instead of the future. You know, he was looking California, feeling Minnesota.
What song is that from?
It's a Soundgarden song.
Oh, okay. I know I had heard it before, but I couldn't place it. The thing is, it was kind of like, well, we want Jaws, but we can't really get a shark. So, cause I don't think this is how alligators are supposed to behave. I'll get to that in a second, but. So, all right, Kyle, what do you have?
All right. Well, these basically were kind of my two parts or characters that really brought this down for me. Dirty Lady, she's just not doing it for me. I mean, I like her character. Like she's intriguing me on, like, you know, what her story is or what she's doing. But I don't feel any threat from her. It's like if it wasn't for having Al's SWAT truck, then, like, why would they even be bothering with her? You know, it's like she's on, you know, talking to her. I'd just be like, okay, fine, whatever. Go away. We'll just keep my eye on you. And I mean, I get the drive-by shooting, you know, I mean, it's like, it just to me felt very predictable. And it's like, hasn't everybody that's been driving that van run out of gas? I get she might possibly be connected to a polar bear. But yeah, we don't know that, but possibly. So, I mean, like, maybe she does have, like, the stockpile, or maybe she knows where to get stuff. But, like, we never get to see that. She's just been in that van since she killed Quinn. And, you know, it's like, did Quinn find some and fill it up to the brim before he got eaten, you know? And so she had a full tank of gas, and she's just like, oh, cool, sweet, you know? It's like these things aren't being shown, and we just have to accept it. And it's like, you know, because that's what the story is. So
it's
just making me feel, it's kind of hard for me when I'm watching it, just to be like, okay, well, I just have to accept this and go along with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of where things are right now. Like, it's the suspension of disbelief. And there have been a few episodes where I've really had a hard time. Like, this one less so, but I hear you. I can see the faults in the story based on what you're saying. There's a lot of coincidence going on, or a lot of yada yada yadas going on.
Well, you know? It's kind of like hard too, because I'm like, well, I don't expect them to basically just like walk me down the whole thing and show me everything in the snap, because you know there's the part where it's like, okay, how did she know Morgan's name? But then Althea's all like, the tapes. So it's like, okay, and I caught that on my second watch. So it's like, okay, yeah, obviously she's in there. Maybe she is watching all the tapes, you know, and she's getting that kind of information.
How could she watch all the tapes so quickly? That was the thing that
I know. But I mean, you know, because the camera was dead, but apparently, you know,
it's had an inverter, a DC inverter on the car.
Well, no, I mean, totally true. But like, this woman must have known how to do that. So we just like, that's another issue. But at least we're getting some kind of explanation from Althea, just being like, oh, the tapes. Okay, that makes sense. At least that got explained.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To agree.
I mean, it was explainable, but my reaction to that was like, she was able to find Morgan's tape specifically, read up about him, like in how much time?
Right.
Because like it couldn't have been that long between the time that Quinn was killed and the time that they communicated over the walkie. An hour? So how did she know that that Althea even had the tapes?
Right.
Like that was it was one of those things. It's like, I want to like this, so I'm not going to really fault this too much, but it's like, that's not great.
Yeah.
it was, but you can dissect any story. I didn't have as much problem with that as I did, well, the 400 miles. I'm going to have a problem with that until my last day on Earth, I think. Anyway, you've got another one.
And then
I have to agree.
Luciana, the goose egg laying Luciana. I mean, I'm sorry, but her whole scene with Clayton, I mean, it was just so predictable and dry. I mean, it was like him. Why would you help a stranger? Her, because I have something to make up for. And then he was like, oh, well, I'm not going to make it. Would you just, I would just love one more beer. And her, she's like, oh, a quest, reward, redemption. I'll go fetch you one, blah. You know, it's like, I'm happy they gave her something to do, but I really am just not interested in her anymore. Like, so I hope she's the one that the trash lady will kill off and we can move on with the rest of the group. Because I just, like, unfortunately, at this point, I don't have anything, like, I want to do with her. Like, she's just filler.
Yeah.
So filler needs to be cut and then move on.
I still don't really understand why the showrunners decided to bring her character back. Because, I mean,
it seems
what would the season be like? Well, not that they could have gotten him, because I know that he has several things going on. But can you imagine what the season would have been like if Daniel had been the guy that survived versus Luciana? I'm sorry, but like, Daniel is such an interesting character, and Ruben Blades magnetic on screen every time he's on screen, and I just don't feel it with her. I have to agree. I mean, I like her scenes, but I don't like they're not giving her character really anything interesting.
No. It's almost like, you know what? I'm like, it almost seems like that she should have been Ophelia at this point.
Yeah.
But since they made that decision and that she died, you know, like got killed off, that they were still like, oh, we still need this kind of character, and she was the only one left. And because could you imagine if Ophelia was still around?
I think that's a good point. I think and for that matter, you know, I mentioned this on the previous episode when she was on Talking Dead. I mean, she's got a really good comedic sense to her. I've never really seen her do anything comedy, but Mercedes Mason is really funny. So I think she would have been great. Can you imagine her in scenes with Wendell and Sarah?
I know.
Yeah.
The last week we saw her, she was awesome.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. All right. Well, Strand's crappy attitude didn't work for me this episode. At first, when I first watched it, I think it was even after second, third watch, I still thought so. It was only reviewing it again before, you know, we recorded that I had to ask the question, did he even row the boat? The answer is yes, he did row the boat. But the way he was carrying on, I thought that he was actually making the injured John Dory row by himself. Mm-hmm. So I'm discrediting him. I'm giving him weak sauce for something he didn't do here. But I'm doing that simply because his like pissy attitude wasn't working for me. You know, just like slamming him back and, you know, complaining about everything. And like going for the scotch, really? Like, I hope that was worth it. I really do. And to that, was it realistic that he wouldn't have been hurt in that tumble? Like, if you watch the scene, it looked like his arm was hanging out at one point, I think. And certainly his legs were hanging out, I think, too, at one point. I did chuckle at the ridiculously sharp root that pierced the Zed's skull though, but I mean, it was just goofy. Yeah. You know,
I thought he was bit for sure though.
You know? Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I mean, when the way he fell into the truck when it, like, he basically he went into the arms of the Zed.
Yeah.
And like, there's no way even tumbling that thing is not still trying to bite you.
Yeah. I know. I agree with that.
Oh, but I hope he didn't.
I don't think he did, because, you know, we saw him in several scenes after that. So I don't think he got killed or got bitten. But to that, the truck, it reminded me of the famous van from season 5, episode 6 of The Walking Dead, Consumed. Not as bad, but it looked like they fudged the truck. If you watch it tumble, it landed one way, like basically it landed face down, or it looked like it was face down. And then suddenly when they showed it again, it was pointing up, and, you know, it annoyed me. I noticed it the first time, but when I watched it again a couple more times, it just was annoying me even more. And when I watched the making of, like, I mentioned the making of and Inside, they're two different, if you don't know this, it's on both YouTube and AMC.com. They have these like little videos about each episode. And so that it's usually the making of has to do with a particular scene, a difficult scene that it's usually something that's special effects laden. And then the inside the episode is them talking about the episode and the different, you know, character beats and whatnot. So this was in the making of video, and it showed them preparing that, and the special effects guy basically admitted that they move the truck, like that it didn't actually fall that way, but they did it that way just to make it, you know, work. So I'm just like, it wasn't as bad as Consume, because that was so bad. That was deer bad. But yeah. You know, it annoyed
me. It's like consistency. I didn't catch that, but now that when I read that, I kind of started just remembering what I saw, and I was like, you know, I did think I kind of saw something was not the same.
Yeah, it definitely didn't look the same. I mentioned the alligators, and I was looking at a comparison between alligators and crocodiles, and this is from Wikipedia. Alligators, unlike the large crocodiles, do not immediately regard a human upon encounter as prey, but may still attack in self-defense if provoked. So it's unlikely that alligators would attack like this. I think they were trying to go for Sharknado here.
Yeah.
You know, but couldn't justify it. So they instead went with alligators, and they can't go with crocodiles. They couldn't use American crocodiles because they're only in Florida. So, you know, and this is Texas, right? So like, I get it. I didn't dock it too much, but I did kind of notice it, because I was, you know, like, my wife, she loved Steve Irwin. Okay, I've probably seen each episode of The Crocodile Hunter at least 5 times, and this is not what alligators do. Alligators are a lot tamer than crocodiles. Now, if this were crocodiles, yeah, they're mean. They will attack humans, but alligators, they don't. They you can basically keep an alligator's jaw shut just with duct tape.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, so that wasn't believable. But again, I understood what they were trying to go for, so I didn't dock the episode too much. I was willing to suspend disbelief on it, but it was still worth noting that it was kind of lame.
Yeah.
All right, let's go for sad sauce now.
Aww.
All right, Mark?
Dieta Patterson says, the death of the truck driver. He was doing good in the hood.
Yeah. Although it's not worth – well, I laugh at that, but I did find it sad that he was gone.
Yeah, so. Same here.
Same. Glennis Goltz, she gives her sad sauce as John Dory eats the candy he was saving for June. Oh no, don't give up and lose all hope and join into strands type of thinking. Keep finding and trying those possible solutions to get off the island.
And I agree with this one, and I had to make sure you said oh no here, because
no!
Ah, Picard. Anyway. All right, Mark, you've got some sad sauces.
Yeah, first one would be Strand acting like Bob Stuckey back in the day of TWD proper in season 4. More interested in the booze than the task at hand. At least he didn't get killed or get someone killed in the process, just like Bob. The other would...
Oh, Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Tainted meat.
Yep. So, tainted meat.
The story and sadness of a journey, pretty much like Maggie Glenn from season 4 of TWD as well. Glenn was on a mission to get Maggie, as John is now with a mission to get to June. Instead of Abraham and Rosita and Eugene, John has Strand in this case, and is feeling bad at the end of this episode. Seeing the bottle half empty instead of how he saw hope in everything before.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of similarities between the actual proper show and how they're trying to steer these characters now.
Yeah.
And it's nice, and it's a good way to reflect, but we could do something a little different, you know, in some respects.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next would be Luciana realizing that, you know, helping someone is the better route to do good for those on our quest to find that pain in the buttocks, Charlie. Her remorse in granting that one wish to the old truck driver, Polar Bear, as we all know, that one last beer. So.
Yep.
Yep. All right. Well, my sad sauce was Clayton. Characters played by Steven Henderson. Like him not making it past a single episode. I mean, he's a really great actor, and it was just sad that he was a red shirt. I mean, you know, it would have been nice to get to know him or more about him and his story. But, you know, I'm guessing that the journal is going to shed some of that light. But I just kind of feel, though, he's such a high caliber character for him just to only appear once.
I really was like, wow.
I mean, he might be a huge fan of the show, but I was like, that was literally like, what, 20 minutes of a scene?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, he's been on Law and Order. He's like been like tons of stuff, you know? It's like, but it was good to finally meet him.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I agree on not getting to see him more. I had some notes in my general stuff more about him, but I'll save those just because they're not so much sad. But all right. So we didn't get any what sauce, but we have some of our own.
What?
Mark?
I'm still saying, what about that damn gator? Where was it? Was it a chupacabra? You can't see it in real life.
I think there wasn't one scene where they just saw its like eyes pop up.
But I wanted to see it on the land or something. But we didn't get it. What?
Nope.
Damn. What was with the attack from the dirty old Oracle lady from the Matrix? Damn, she is so nuts. She's crazy. Sorry to have to quote Short Round from Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, but it fits. When will John Dory run out of candy? It's like he has a never-ending supply of sweets on him.
I don't know if maybe that was his last piece.
Well, that would be sad if that's true.
Yeah.
He needs to raid a Dollar Tree.
A Dollar Tree? yeah, they don't have those kind of stores in this universe. And you would think that would be pretty popular.
Yeah.
You know, all the $1 items you need.
Although I guess those would have been the first things to be raided.
I guess.
I would.
Yeah, no, I would too. Everybody's going to the big box stores. I'll just go to the Dollar Tree or the CVS.
Yeah, they have all the canned foods.
Yeah, because no one shops at them enough that they just sit there on the shelf.
I don't know. I've been to some busy Dollar Trees. Depends on the time of year, I think.
Yeah, that's probably true. I would raid them first, thinking that would be my best chance. All right. Well, my what sauce was kind of along with the gator thing, because the waves the gator was making, it just reminded me of that scene in Star Wars when they were being crushed by that trash compactor, and there was that tentacle monster attacking everybody. But it was like the way the water was moving around, and like, you know, we got the scene of just the eyes popping up, but the rest of it was just like this little, you know, like wave moving and then like this kind of dark shadow looking thing.
Yeah. they couldn't afford the alligator wrangler.
No, it was just like, but it just looks like, oh yeah, you just move the waves. And I thought of that scene for some reason. I was like, oh yeah, it's like that.
Yeah. To that, I'm going to say, I think I would raid a Dollar General before I would go to a Dollar Tree, because they pretty much have everything there, but it's smaller, so you don't have so much to cover. Like a Walmart, you know, you could probably go through that in like 2 years. Yeah, true. Whereas a Dollar General is compact, but it still has a whole lot of stuff in it, so it's more manageable. But
okay.
And it has right. better stuff than the Dollar Tree. But anyway, Hardwick, I'm going to single you out for this one. You're wrong about black licorice. He was talking about that on Talking Dead, yeah. the last two episodes. And if he needs a recommendation, I recommend All Sorts, which originally comes from England, but they're really popular in Canada. I've seen them here too.
Yeah.
They're really good.
They are good.
Never had. Yeah. Or a lot of really good Australian licorice. They make really good licorice in Australia. I don't know why. But them's the bomb. So I have to say, I think he's wrong about that. I like black licorice. I think I actually prefer it to red, believe it or not.
It's been so long since I've had it, so I can't really comment.
All right. Well, let's play for the second time. Simon.
We can talk about
We're
it.
Done talking. Time to listen.
All right. Mark, why don't you start our feedback?
Glenna Skolt says, Luciana finding the beer for Clayton as his last request and finally connecting back to Morgan and Co. as a result of Morgan's message left on the box was great.
Yeah, I wonder if – was that the same box that he had marked earlier, or was it just another box that he had marked that we didn't see?
I'm thinking it was the same box.
Yeah,
so am I.
She continues, I wonder if the filthy lady knows Clayton personally, and she is the person he referred to that he didn't want to find, as she has a huge vendetta and rage against anyone who helps others. Why?
Mm-hmm. But, indeed. Yeah, why?
Yeah, and I feel the same way.
More on this later.
To use John Dory's term, they are in a pickle, and it'll be interesting to see how they get out of it all. Hopefully we won't lose any more main characters in these last Fear the Walking Dead 3 episodes.
I wouldn't be surprised if we do. I really hope it's not John. That thing where he ate the blackjack.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, I hope that's not like a foretelling.
Yeah, foreshadowing.
You know, and I know he's a busy actor. I think he's shooting a movie right now. Yep. So it's possible that, you know, he could move on. But I want to see this character on this show next season. And, you know, hopefully as long as the show keeps playing, because, you know, he's right now, I'd say John Dory, Strand, Morgan, and Alicia are the reasons to watch the show. Yep. And, you know, without but John Dory, I think, I just love this guy. I mean, I said it earlier, he's one of the characters that you would see in the zombie apocalypse, and I want him on my side. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's a guy you can trust. That's a good guy. He's a capable guy. He's a great shooter. So I don't want to see him go. And it's almost like they're going to, you know, bring him back, and, you know, he'll get to see June one last time and then die.
Oh, no.
I totally agree.
Now that we're actually like from before to being like, we're John Dory approve.
No, trust me. I do not want to see this. And
yeah, I don't,
you know, either. So let's hope that doesn't happen this time. But
he's a great opposite, like his personality and just his characters is such a opposite of even our main group.
And I want to see, like, they haven't had that much time together, like, in the present, but I want to see John and June get together and kind of be like the Maggie and Glenn of this show.
Yeah.
Because I'm rooting for them, you know? So, and you know, I didn't single out June, but I mean, she's also become a lot more interesting to me than she was in the first half. But together. Oh man, I want to see those two characters succeed. So yeah, don't. I hope they don't kill him off.
Nah,
I really don't.
Nah, I see him. I see John Dory pretty much as the positive Daryl Dixon.
Yeah,
his popularity has grown so much, and this is coming from one of the unofficial members of the John Dory fan club. And Strand always seems to. I kind of relate it to the regular proper show, and I see him almost like the Glenn of that show. So.
Yeah, if you get a photo op with him at
I have it.
Atlanta, yeah. I well, said. You better wear that shirt, man.
Yeah, I will.
Yeah, because Kyle and I will be there with you in spirit. Believe me.
My photo ops are mostly fear.
Oh, great! Oh,
so it's that's Jenna cool. Elfman, Garrett Dillahunt, and Maggie Grace.
Yeah. Well, I told you about Jenna Elfman. She was really nice in person, and I think you'll enjoy meeting her too.
Cool.
So yeah, all right. So let's move on to our next bit of feedback, and this one really I had a warm feeling in my heart when I saw this come in.
All right. Our next feedback comes from Dieta Patterson. Hi everyone. Hi, Dieta. I want to thank everybody for all the thoughts and prayers for me and my family. They were greatly appreciated.
We should probably explain to those of you that don't know. She recently, lost her mom quite suddenly. So, she's been in our thoughts and prayers, and I've been thinking about her quite a bit. And I was hoping she would come back at some time during the season, and I was really happy to see her come back. So, yay, Dieta! Hope you're doing great. Under the circumstances, obviously, but it's good to see you back.
Yep,
you're a big. You've been a part of the community around this podcast pretty much from the beginning. So,
yep.
Pleased to have you back. All right, continue.
All right, and Dieta continues with, I finally caught up on episodes and podcasts, so here we go. So, I missed the zombie NATO with everybody running off in different directions in a hurricane. Real smart. Now everybody is trying to find their way back to each other while a crazy zombie worshiper is going around turning folks just for the hell of it. So, what's her beef with Morgan? And why didn't she try to kill him when he came across her? I don't know why John Dory reminds me of the Outback guy. Smiling.
That's not a knife. That's a knife.
Crocodile Dundee.
She gives two big smiley faces. Dory and Strand are like the odd couple to me. They are hilarious together. Dory is trying to keep hope alive, and Strand is stepping all on his hope clouds. Why does Strand not want to believe that the others may have survived the storm? Didn't they all just survive the damn explosion? Oh,
no. Yeah, very true.
Yeah. Overall, a decent episode.
Yeah, it is kind of true that, they had survived this big damn explosion where, they very well could have died, and yet, he's being fatalist. But I think a lot of that is also, him mourning over
Madison.
The loss of Madison and, maybe to a slightly lesser extent, although they were always buds. I'm sure he's also feeling the death of Nick,
I think he even said so at Comic-Con that, he's going to be basically dealing with a lot of dark stuff, and it's just whether or not does he get through it or not. But
yeah,
it makes complete sense that it's like, they just lost, he lost his basically kind of his pal.
Yeah. I had this in the show notes later on, but I'm going to read this now. There were two, I said to you guys, I don't want to make quote sauce a sauce, but I did have two quotes from Strand that I thought were worth mentioning.
How dare you?
He said, I know, sorry guys, but he said, I lost my taste for boating some time ago. season two, perhaps? Abigail? And then he said, I drink to forget. And then I think after John asked him, he said, I don't have anyone to drink with anymore. And of course, you know, that refers to Madison. So, yeah, I mean, it's sad to see what he's going through, but all right. Let's continue here. PB and Zane is next. She says, how did John think that tiny raft would fit two people? LOL, indeed. I would have to say it was kind of, you know, I guess maybe that's all he had, but it was kind of lame. How is that walker so strong as to pull Strand into a truck? And why doesn't he kill the walker first? I thought the same thing. Strand gets stranded, even only for a few seconds. Ha ha, see what I did there? Yes, I did. I know you do. Yes, I did. As soon as the guy in the car said he wanted a beer, I figured he was Polar Bear. The last segment was one of the best I've seen this season. The gang starting to come together again is good. I found this episode to be an improvement over the last few. Yeah, I agree with that. And yeah, I did like the last part. So, all right. Well, we're up to our own notes. So, Mark, we'll start with you. What do you have?
Well, I have to say it. I said it a little bit before. I like the goofy dialogue with Sarah Wendell and Jimbo. It adds a bit of flavor to the show. It doesn't have to be serious all the time. We all enjoyed Abraham Ford's odd sayings in The Walking Dead proper, as well as Eugene's weird talk. We have that here. I think Gipple wanted a little bit of a comic booky thought in the show, but still maintain the idea of the original series, which was pretty much people on the road and surviving. So we're looking at, it's like, we're walking, we're walkers, and just not to pun a phrase from the Robot Chicken one, but that's really what the original show was. And now they're at a standstill being in Alexandria and bring communities together. And with this show, they're continuing on with their walk and journey. I would like it to be a little bit more original, though, and not, you know, use similar style stories like I mentioned before to the proper show. I do love this episode, though. I really enjoyed it. It was very entertaining. And the dialogue was really fun, especially with Wendell, Jimbo, and Sarah.
Yeah,
I will say that it is like the original The Walking Dead combined with BJ and the Bear. And if you don't get that reference, it was BJ and the Bear was basically a chimpanzee and Greg Evigan
and
trucking. So, you know, so that's it's like a convoy, like Glynis said earlier, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a Smokey and the Bandit or something. Yeah, right. Well, let's move on. I think that's all you had, right, Mark?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. All right. Kyle, what do you have?
I mean, I don't have much to say that hasn't already been said. I mean, it looks like our group will finally get together at some point. We have 3 episodes left till the final or till the season finale. And Morgan seems to be the question mark for me, as the titles of the last 2 episodes of the season reference, spoiler, which we kind of already talked about this, you know, several episodes ago. And because of the dirt lady is picking his brain with the you lose people, you lose yourself, and Morgan's drive to save someone, which he says, and when we are done, we are going to help you. Are we going to get some big bang, or are we going to get a whimper when this all ends and we head into season 5? Because I'm not sensing where they are going with this. I have reservations. Because we know we only have so many episodes left, and we know I what was it? We talked about, I don't know, you know, a while ago, where like they actually spelled out all the titles and like the directors and all that stuff for the rest of the season. And so season 4, episode 15 is titled I Lose People. Season 4, episode 16 is I Lose Myself.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously know.
Yeah.
What that means.
Yeah.
And here we are, 3 episodes away. You know,
yeah.
It's, I'm worried a little bit. But
wouldn't that suck if at the end of this they kill off Morgan?
Yes.
Yes.
I can't see them doing that.
Or Morgan leaves, or
yeah,
I gotta
go find my friend Rick. Bye.
Or what if he starts clearing and then he just like runs off and then leaves our group at like a really bad spot because he can't take, you know, I don't know. It's like, I feel like obviously they brought him back for, yes, ratings, but he's, you know, the lead in the show.
Yeah.
To here we are, the last 2 episodes of the whole entire season. Basically, we know it's revolving around him. We see this crazy woman poking and prodding him about stuff, you know, like knowing like you've been here before, you're strong. I'm worried for Morgan. I'm worried for our group, but I don't know.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. And she's still stinky.
Yes.
Filthy.
She needs to take a shower or a bath in one of those like truck stops.
I heard on another podcast, they made this point and I have to agree, like compared to Filthy Woman, wouldn't she kind of be the norm in the apocalypse versus like the well-coiffed hair of Alicia?
Very true.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
well, you would think she would go out when it was like that storm and had all that weather and that water. She could just go take a shower outside.
Yeah. You would think so, wouldn't you? it was almost like she was taking a mud bath or something while that was going on. Yeah.
Maybe she's like, well, and I think I might have heard that on another podcast too, where it was just like, well, maybe she's trying to be kind of like the walkers.
Well, I had thought about maybe her doing that to try to camouflage her scent, you know, instead of using blood, which you notice they haven't used that one single time this season.
Yeah.
Holy cow, what a difference. versus, you know, so it's more like she's reducing her scent versus like, you know, wearing the scent of the dead, you know? So, but I don't know if that's what it is. I think she's just,
she might be just dirty,
diluted. Well, she's a couple fries short of a happy meal, I think.
Yeah, and she's not very hygienic.
No. More on her later.
Yes, please.
So, yeah. All right. So, I will say that, there was some parallels between this episode with Luciana searching for a beer for Clayton. And I have to say that when I first watched this, I somehow missed the fact that she was searching for a beer. I don't know why, but I did not pick up on it. I must have looked away or looking at my
phone,
iPad or something at the time. But anyway, for whatever reason, I missed the point. So it made sense and very convenient, though. It's like, you know, well, this happens to be, you know, the polar bear. And this just happens to be one of the boxes that, you know, Jimbo put a beer in. And, oh, look at this. It's even cold. Mm-hmm. Like, they got enough ice to be able to do that or ice packs. Anyway. So this reminded me of Still, you know, the episode, of course, where Daryl and Beth go to search for a place where Beth can get a real drink. Not my favorite, but, you know, there were good character moments in that episode. But
yeah,
the whole premise of them, you know, going to get a drink for Beth, I had a problem with.
Their rebellion phase.
Yeah. So, I had mentioned I had a few more things to say about Clayton. He would have been a wise Herschel type in this show that I definitely could have seen us spend more episodes with. Like, he would have been good to be around for the whole half season. So I agree with you about, you know, only getting him one episode. Mm-hmm. I was surprised Purvis wasn't the truck driver, because that wasn't obvious to me, although it was kind of established early in the episode when Sarah and Wendell, Wendell slash Sarah, I guess it was Sarah with the assist from Wendell, to put it in a hockey perspective, killed the zombie Purvis. It was clear they didn't know who he was. Mm-hmm. So, and they had said that the driver is still alive. So, mm-hmm. So yeah, I was a little surprised that it wasn't Purvis, but, they like to tie things in a knot, sometimes. So I appreciated that. And it was also worth saying that it was pretty obvious that the one that wanted to see him, but that he didn't want to see, is the crazy lady. Although he didn't mention Sarah and Wendell, which obviously he knows them because they got the truck from him, right? So, yeah. You know, that doesn't mean, like, he said that was the only one that he knew. Well, he forgot about those two. I would have assumed that he had mentioned them.
Yeah.
You know, but all right. So I like to do this sometimes. Back in season one, it was a whole thing about, like, what time is this? Like, what year is this? And Ruthie and I talked about that quite a bit in season one. We had basically figured it was like the last part of 2010, when the show started. Mm-hmm. So where are they in Texas? We've been kind of, we know they're in Texas except for the Mississippi part. Mm-hmm. But we got some clues this episode. So we see Luciana going to a library, and the library is the Nolan County Library. Well, unlike, you know, King County, Georgia, which doesn't exist, Nolan County in this series does exist. There is an actual Nolan County in the state of Texas. Its county seat is Sweetwater. So it's a, you know, really small town. Like, I think it was like 12,000 or something like that. I looked it up earlier. Smaller town. But we could assume that that's where that library was. So it turns out Sweetwater is 236 miles southeast of Amarillo and 181 miles west of Fort Worth. So, you know, we can assume, based on the fact that Luciana was able to get them, you know, over the walkie, that they were pretty close. So, you know, even if I want to go to extremes, if they weren't in Nolan County, they were in one of the adjacent counties. So Mitchell County is to the west, Taylor to the east, Fisher to the north, Coke County to the south, and Runnels County to the southeast. Yeah, I know. I didn't need to go to that detail. But, you know, I went down a rabbit hole. Anyway, so the funny thing about that is a lot further west and north than I thought they were. Like, it's actually, you know, closer to New Mexico than I thought they were. It's kind of like middle of the state, kind of, but also like north middle, yeah. I guess you could say. Nowhere near Houston, which we know that they were 76 miles from Houston. Wasn't that just last episode?
Yeah,
that's so. Fine. Yeah, they've been moving around, so that's quite a bit further away, like several hundred miles away. So it's just some interesting tidbits there I had not expected. Okay, so I nearly put this in weak sauce, and it is a weak point. The MRAP can only shoot from one side, so the semi could have easily dealt with the MRAP by driving in the lane that wouldn't give the MRAP a clear shot, right?
Yep.
Now, I will admit I got this point from The Talking Dead, but I heard it like, you're right. Maybe this will be addressed next week. Like we see from the spoiler, we see from the trailer that it looks like our guys survive. Maybe that's how they survive. You know, maybe they maneuvered the truck in such a way that Crazy Lady couldn't get the shot out. So I don't know. But the fact that, you know, Althea was in the trailer portion, she wasn't in the cabin. She wouldn't have time to tell them to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there are some explanations there. That's kind of why I didn't put it in the weak sauce, but I hope that they address this next episode. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, there are faults, but I really wanted to enjoy this one. And for the most part I did. So like I said before, there were problems with it, but they didn't bother me nearly as much as the last couple episodes problems did. Do you think that this filthy woman can be redeemed or reformed, or is she too far gone? What do you guys think?
I'm feeling a little bit that she's too far gone, just because she, who knows how long she's been dealing or in this world by herself, but like you have to think that she's gone through this mental whatever battle within herself that she's probably never going to listen to anybody. She probably wants to turn everybody over because that's what she thinks is like, that's the way that things are supposed to be. So I don't know. It would seem very weird for her to all of a sudden like have a light bulb go off and be like, oh yeah, oh yeah, I should not kill everybody. We're all great. Happy family. Kumbaya. She's going to die.
Mark.
I still stand on that. She no nuts. She's crazy. she's gone kind of ways of like Lizzie did. I'm sorry. The way she was talking about, oh, you won't be weak. And it's all about manipulation. And it's like it's the same crazy kind of character. And there's no way of redeeming herself in some way. Yeah. Morgan,
reality's changed.
Yeah, it's like Morgan has a duality within his mind. And sometimes where he doesn't clear. And then he just, you know, goes to Morgan trying to help and preserve life and meaning all life is precious. I think he's starting to come out of that slowly, but I don't think there's any way of redeeming this woman. She needs to be put down like a rabid dog.
I don't think I have anything to add to that. She should die horribly and quickly. I think Lizzie had some psychological problems prior to the apocalypse that were magnified.
True.
Yeah.
Where I think this character had some kind of a psychotic break, almost like the governor, except more extreme.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know? So, I think she's crazy. I think that there is no redeeming her. I think Morgan, if he tries to do that, he's going to find that he has met his match. And yeah. All right. You guys got anything else, or nope. Shall we move on to news, ratings, and info? Oh, Madison and Travis.
What the hell is happening?
I have no idea.
All right, so we have ratings this week because we didn't have them last week. So just for comparison's sake, let's go back to 2 weeks ago. Season 4, Episode 11, it got a 0.61 in the 18 to 49 with 1.827 million viewers. Last week, which we didn't have the ratings for last week at the time we recorded, we thought that the ratings would be down. And unfortunately, yeah, Yeah, they were down even worse than I thought they would be. A 0.48. So it didn't even get a half a point in the 18 to 49 ratings demographic with only 1.521 million viewers. And I compared this on the Facebook group, looking at the Live Plus 3, because I know, Kyle, you were interested in how these turned out. And they certainly did improve. It got a 0.84 in the 18 to 49, so it went up 0.36 points, an additional 74%, basically, increase with 2.506 million viewers. So that's up almost a million, and that is roughly 65% increase over the same day. Not surprising, but I was kind of surprised when I saw, like, because they always do the Live Plus 3 and the Live Plus 7, looking at all shows for the week. Mm-hmm. And Better Call Saul, for the first time that I can remember, actually got ratings that were better than Fear the Walking Dead. Mm-hmm. I didn't write them down here, but you can see more detail on that in the Facebook group. But yeah, it got better ratings. Now, mind you, it was on the Monday and not Labor Day Monday, but it was on Monday. And I remember looking at the ratings, I think, on Monday, Labor Day Monday. And I, if I'm not mistaken, I think it got better ratings that then too, at least in the total viewers. Mm-hmm. I will kind of check that for next week. But okay, so for this week, ratings did rebound somewhat. Didn't get back up to the 2 weeks ago numbers, but it got a 0.57 in the 18 to 49 with 1.712 million viewers. So going quickly through The Talking Dead, 2 weeks ago, it only got a 0.12, and that was at a later time with 425,000 viewers back at 10 o'clock. Last week, it got a 0.17. in the 18 to 49. So it actually went up with 623,000 viewers. So it went up a couple hundred thousand viewers. And for this week, it also got a 0.17 in the 18 to 49 with 601,000 viewers. So that was kind of surprising. Like, I just compared Labor Day ratings to non-Labor Day ratings for the Fear show, and it was quite a bit higher, but the Talking Dead ratings were lower this week. So I was kind of surprised.
Yeah.
All right. I had already mentioned something I was going to mention for info, so I'll skip that. But I do have some news. The season premiere of The Walking Dead, it's been announced, will be 90 minutes. So that's on October 7th. Hmm. And they're already publicizing it, saying Rick's final episodes. Yeah. And you know what I noticed? I don't have the graphic here, but you see some of the ones where the one of the banners has Rick and he's wearing his sheriff's hat.
Yep.
Again.
Yeah.
Which is surprising. And he's in red.
He's a red shirt.
He's a red shirt. Exactly.
I know.
I have to think that's not they're doing that intentionally. Okay, so some good news. The People's Choice Awards. The Walking Dead has received 8 nominations, actually. The Walking Dead show itself got 3 nominations for Show of 2018. You notice how they don't say Best Show. They just say Show. Yeah. Anyway, so it got Show of 2018, Drama Show of 2018, and Binge-Worthy Show of 2018 nominations. In the category of Male TV Star of 2018, there were 2 nominations, one for Andrew Lincoln and one for Norman Reedus. And we also see something similar for the female TV star of 2018. Lauren Cohan and Danai Gurira both earned nominations for that. And Andrew Lincoln also got a nomination for Drama TV Star of 2018. So eight nominations. So that's pretty good.
Yeah,
pretty good.
Except for the fact that Norman Reedus, really, male TV star of 2018, he just grunted his way through that season.
Yeah, but it was such a powerful grunt.
Yeah. Hopefully they give him a dog.
Yeah, there is some stories I've seen that Angela Kang might actually give him a dog. And I know Norman Reedus has wanted the character to have a dog for some time. So I said it before on here, but I am looking forward to what they give us for season 9.
Yeah.
And a big reason for that is it's certainly not because I want to see Rick go, but the enthusiasm and just the things that she says, Angela Kang, the new showrunner, I think that if anyone has a chance to breathe new life into the show, I think it's her.
Oh, definitely. So, yeah. She's very positive. And the cast is genuinely, you could actually see, it's not something that's written every time they do promotion for it from San Diego Comic-Con or all the other interviews that they were doing. In comparison to seasons past, they actually are genuinely excited for this and they're happy about it.
Yeah. I'm sure they're not happy to see Andrew Lincoln go.
No.
But from a story perspective, I think that she has – I said it before. I think they probably should have made her showrunner a season or two ago.
Yeah.
I mean, what would she have done with the introduction of Negan? What would she have done with that episode? You know, like, would she have done the big cliffhanger? I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. I don't think so either. So, yeah, I'm really looking forward to see what comes out of her because she certainly had some of the best episodes on the show in recent seasons. So, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, cool.
One final thing. There was a release of the new logo for The Walking Dead that we're going to see on the show. And it is much more we see stone and like vines and
green shrubbery
kind of growing from it, which is completely different than what we see, but I really like that.
Yeah, this is the first time I'm seeing it, and I think it's because the show is going in a new direction and are renewing in itself, so now they could slowly decay that off in time.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's it for news for this week. So, Kyle, take us out with all the ways to submit feedback.
All right. To submit your theories and feedback, you can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, or you can submit text or audio or use the SpeakPipe widget and call 304-837-2278. Or like most people, post in our designated episode thread in our Facebook group, which you can find at facebook.com/groups/WalkingDeadGSM. And don't forget the deadline for submitting feedback next episode is Tuesday, September 18th, 6 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Central. And don't forget, we're also on Twitter, and you can find us there at WalkingDeadGSM. To support us, the best way you can do that is by subscribing to us in Apple Podcasts. You can go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. And while you're there, give us a rating or review. You can also find all the other ways to support GSM at goldenspiralmedia.com/support.
All right. So where else can we be listened to? Mark, why don't you tell the listeners?
Well, you could find me and Steve Brown on Panels to Pixels podcast on the Next Level Podcast Network.
And I am pleased to say we have finally recorded that big roundtable episode that I kept mentioning just last Saturday night. So we should have it out with either later this – sorry, I said that wrong. We should have it out later this week or possibly on the weekend, but I'm hoping to have it out like Thursday or Friday. And it had a grand total of 6 people on the roundtable, including the aforementioned Steve Brown. So, and it was a really good time. It's a long one. We also covered some feedback, a little bit of feedback that we had gotten that we hadn't been able to cover. But like, that's going to be the first episode that we've had in like 5 months. So, and you know, the show's going to be coming back pretty soon. So we're looking forward to, getting more regular with that podcast. Kyle, how is the tea and bananas going?
Goodness. You know, I've been drinking a lot of tea and eating a lot of bananas, you know, in the mornings before, you know, for breakfast, but I just haven't been recording it.
You know, you keep talking about this and the more I'm like, this is, I wonder what he's got planned. This sounds interesting.
Actually, we should just do something spontaneously one day and just record it.
Just record it.
And then use that as an add-on and be like, hey guys, this is Welcome tea and bananas with
Oh, we totally could do that. That would be hilarious. Yeah, just like, I don't know what to say other than just like, we all can take little videos of ourselves eating bananas and tea and just being like, that's good.
I'll dunk it in my Earl Grey.
Yeah. Oh, no. Yeah. Well, it could be Earl Grey. Yeah, we have to come up with our own individual teas.
I have Earl Grey all the time.
It could be a podcast about nothing.
Yep.
which you know, like Mark and I have gotten on, you know, like these kind of open mic things with, you know, another Facebook group that we both belong to. And yeah, some the way those conversations go, it can be quite interesting. So you never know. All right. Next episode is season 4, episode 14, which is titled MM54, which I've now figured out, and you know, lots of other people have figured out, must be mile marker 54. That only makes sense. Written by Anna Fishko, who's I think a supervising producer on the show, and Shintaro Shimasawa, who I know wrote the episode where Nick died, and he's a co-exec producer. Directed by a very pretty famous actor and a former guest on Talking Dead, Lou Diamond Phillips. And the description is as follows. Difficult decisions lead the group into uncertainty. Alicia delivers on a promise to Charlie. Promise to Charlie?
I know.
And that's why I played that as opposed to this. Yeah,
look at the waves, Charlie.
You think that's what that promise is? It's basically she's going to kill Charlie off?
No, but we can only hope.
What is the promise then?
That they find everybody or that, yeah, I don't know. In her episode, did she say anything at the end? I can't recall.
I don't remember there being anything about no. promise, but yeah. All right. We have a spoiler, and we're going to play this at the end of the episode. So if you want to hear it, just listen after the music plays. All right, so to sign off, I'm going to say, until next time, I'm Brian.
And I'm Kyle.
And I think I'm still Mark.
Yes, you are. And this is Fear the Walking Dead Talk Through. Good night, everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, ghouls.
So I wanted to put this as a spoiler because I saw the opening minutes of the next episode on AMC Premiere. And it begins the episode with a filthy woman flashback. So I don't know.
Is she clean?
Should I go in? Yes. Well, it's a spoiler, so I guess I can go into more detail unless you guys don't want
to
hear.
Go ahead. I can see it.
Yeah, same here.
Okay. Yeah. So essentially, the opening minutes are that she had a husband and looked like the husband had been in, you know, they had smashed up the car and it looked like he got a beam or something to the side of him and he's bleeding out. And she's trying to get help. And this clearly is like right at the beginning of the, like this would have been, you know, during season one of Fear. Okay. So maybe episode three or something. And she's trying to like, you know, hail down people and people are just passing by her and like actually, avoiding her. Like there's this one car that like even drives off the road just so he doesn't, you know, the driver doesn't have to stop. And, you know, she's basically there as the husband appears to be ready to pass away. And then, so that's why I'm thinking this filthy woman snapped. And it had to do with the fact that, you know, no one helped her when she needed it. Of course, that's all speculation at this point, but we do see in the trailer, and it has had to, this scene that they show has the saturated color. Okay. So that's why we know it was in the past. And we also see a scene that's in the trailer where it looks like some woman comes up to her, as she is, you know, picking up one of the boxes, and she thanks the filthy woman, and the filthy woman says something like, you know, I don't help someone, and she stabs this other person in the neck with like some, you know, crafted spear or something. So and then she's like marching her around with this person, you know, having this you know, makeshift spear in the throat and still alive, walking her around. So it was pretty scary looking. So anyway, that's in the spoiler. So we know in the spoiler that we're going to see somewhat of an explanation of the filthy woman. Beyond that, I don't know. Obviously, Charlie's get a promise. So we'll see.
It's got me intrigued.
All right.
So keep posted for future spoiler hot sauces.
Special spoiler hot sauce. All right.